Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Doster. It is Friday, so it is the Best Bets Podcast, the last one that we have of the regular season. Full disclosure, I am actually recording this on Thursday morning with Riggs from Barstool Sports, the way we always do it. But we had to record it early because as of Friday morning, as of this moment on Friday morning, I will hopefully be welcoming my second child into the world. Oh. So it makes it a little difficult. I didn't think the wife wanted me to record a podcast while we were in the delivery room. I didn't ask. I just assumed that was probably going to end up being a no. So I figured we had to get this done beforehand.
It makes for great content, though.
It would make for some great content.
You would know if the kid was a good luck charm or not, too.
Oh, yeah, I would. Definitely. Absolutely, man. Riggs, what's going on? How you doing, bro?
Great, man. This is my favorite 2 weeks of the year. I know everyone loves the NCAA tournament. Don't get me wrong, I do. But there's something about conference tournament week that I love. It's probably the fact that there's just more games, and it's the same setting of win or go home for the majority of ones. But I love these 2 weeks, man.
Yeah, I love it too, just because I love tournament basketball. I love afternoon basketball.
Right.
I love...
You get the mid-majors playing at home, or like, you know, the low-majors playing at home, the mid-majors on like a neutral court, but it's always dominated by one or two teams. And then for me, like, I was talking about this earlier today. What is the game that's what is the one game that tells you it's championship week? Because there's one for me that's always been the answer.
It is the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament title game, because that always comes late night on Saturday, on the last Saturday of the regular season.
I like that one. For me, it's the 8-9 game in the ACC. That's when it always felt like championship week.
Is that the one like Tuesday morning?
Tuesday at noon. I guess when it was like a 9-team league, it would have been what, Wednesday at noon?
Yep.
Or Thursday at noon? It was always that noon game. That one or the old Big East noon game. Those two were just like, okay, it's here.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let me ask you this, since this is the Best Bets Podcast. What is your favorite futures bet when it comes to kind of either mid-majors or high majors or whatever? What's your favorite futures bet on conference tournaments?
I like Siena. I just mentioned it. It claims it's a neutral court, but it's actually at Siena's home court. They're the 5 seed in a wide open MAAC. They have Jalen Pickett, who is one of the, what, 3 best players in that league, if not the best player.
Yep.
They have Jamie Christian, their head coach, is a really good tournament coach. We saw him win, what, 2 NEC titles?
Yeah, he won one when he was 29, and then what, he made it last year, I believe, with Mount St. Mary's.
Right. So he knows, like, he's got success in a tournament setting. That, I think, goes a long way from a coaching standpoint. And the MAAC is just wide open. I mean, there's like 6 teams that could win this, and I wouldn't bat an eye at it. So I'll take Siena on their home court. You can get them like 4-1 at most places. For being a home court team and having one of the best players on the league, I'll just kind of trust that.
Yeah, I did not take Siena because I could not get anybody in the MAC better than like plus 285, and I just don't think that anything like that's just not good enough value for me.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of plus 375 for me, so that makes it even more enticing.
Yeah, so the 2 favorite bets I had coming into the week were LIU Brooklyn at plus 1800. They won last night in the quarterfinals, and they're heading to the semis now. And Jacksonville State at plus 900. I love Ray Harper. All he does is win tournaments, and Jacksonville State is 3-0 against Murray State and Belmont in OVC play this year. So,
and it's a neutral, and that's a true neutral court tournament.
Yeah, I think it's in Evansville, Indiana this year. It's wild, dude. Ray Harper has he won the 2017 OVC title with Jacksonville State. He made it to 2 NCAA tournaments with Western Kentucky when they did not have a record above 500 in league play. He won the 2007 NAIA Division II title. He won or Division I title. He won the 2008 NAIA Division I title, and he won 2 NCAA Division II national titles in 1999 and 2001. So
the dude can coach in March.
Yes, 7 of the last 20 years, the dude has won a tournament in March. So I really like that bet at plus 900, especially considering that they have swept Murray State. Murray State and Belmont have lost four games all year in league play, right? One of them was Belmont winning at Murray State. The other three losses were all to Jacksonville State. So that's why I love that bet.
The only thing I might like with Belmont there is the fact they don't have, like, Murray State and Jacksonville State, assuming they both win today, have to play each other. So I think Belmont does have a little bit of value there if you're still looking for a future, just because they don't have to go up again. They only have to play one of those three teams once or two other teams once.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely makes sense. I was not able to get good enough odds on either Belmont or Murray State to make it worthwhile. I think Belmont was like minus 130 and Murray something State like that, was like plus 100 for me or something like that. There's two other ones that I really like. One, Wofford is minus 167. And
yeah,
they did not lose a single game all year in the SoCon. And at minus 167, like, that's not great odds, but to put that in comparison, Vermont was minus 670 for me.
That makes no sense.
South Dakota State was minus 286. That's, if you can get Wofford, a top 15 team playing in the SoCon, who hasn't lost to a SoCon team all season long, playing in a tournament that is an hour from their campus in Asheville, North Carolina, minus 167, it's not bad.
Yeah, they're minus 170 for me. That's not bad. I do like UNC. If you don't want Wofford and you want plus odds, I like UNC Greensboro at 6-1.
Yeah, that's pretty good. The only concern I have is that is the furthest away. They are 3 hours from Asheville, and everybody else is 1 hour from Asheville, which is odd because, like, Furman and East Tennessee State and Wofford are all outside of North Carolina.
Right.
But they are closer to the tournament in North Carolina than the actual team that is part of the state of North Carolina, which is kind of weird. The one I want to mention is Illinois State plus 1,100. I think that they are – you can make the argument they're the most talented team in the conference. They get, as long as they win the playing game against Evansville, they get Drake, who not only lost like their best player early on in the season, but just lost a freshman, DJ Wilkins, that averages 11 points heading into the conference tournament. So that's a game that Illinois State can absolutely win. They have arguably like the most talented, I don't want to call him the best player in the conference, but I think you can make the argument that Malik Yarbrough is the most talented player in the conference. And you know, they're a mess. They're kind of like what Iowa State is in the Big 12 right now. But if you can get them at, what is it, like plus, is it plus 1,600 or plus, either way.
12-1 for me.
Yeah, so either way, that's pretty good value and pretty good odds if you want to take a long shot futures.
And I think MVC is wide open too. Like, I don't think Loyola is worth plus 160.
No, I would not take them plus 160. All right, so let's move on to the games that happened on Saturday. Again, a reminder, we are recording this on Thursday morning. It's going to be published live on Friday morning. We do not have the actual lines, and we also do not have updated injury statuses, at least official ones, for Zion Williamson, Nick Ward, Charles Matthews, Mariel Shayek, a whole bunch of these guys that are kind of banged up. So we are going to be doing the best we can with the info that we have. We're going to try to talk about it if it goes both ways. But a lot of these decisions are pretty clear cut. Like Zion with Duke, North Carolina, the game on Saturday afternoon. The way that the projections have it, KenPom has North Carolina winning by one. Torvik and Haslametrics both have them winning by two. But that is with the projections including, like, you know, 85% of Duke's games being played with Zion Williamson. So kind of talk me through this and how you're approaching this situation, Reeks.
So, you know, I'm not taking anything away from what Carolina did at Cameron, but I'm also not investing a whole lot in it, because when Duke loses Zion 30 seconds into the game, you don't prepare for that, right? Like, they've been able to at least prepare for this game without Zion. Now, I'm not saying Duke's going to win, but at least you're not getting shocked the moment you step onto the court, essentially. Like, I think that just played a huge, huge role into what happened during that game. I don't think North Carolina is a 15-point favorite without Zion like they were in Cameron. Now, we saw what UNC can do on the interior without Zion, and I think that still holds true no matter what happens. Right? Like, Luke May is able to take advantage of what, Jack White on him or Bolden on him, depending on what lineups they go with. Or
a lot of times it was like R.J. Barrett or Cam Reddish that was guarding Luke May.
Right, so whoever they put on him, he's going to be able to take advantage, I think. I still think I kind of like the over in this one. Just because if Zion doesn't play, there is that mismatch for Carolina. It's still going to be an up-and-down game. It's not like Duke's going to slow the game down. We know Carolina's not going to slow the game down.
Yeah, my concern is, one, what does the total open up at?
That's an interesting thing, too.
Because all the projections have it like in the high 160s, if not one, like the low 170s.
And I think it's going to be like low 160s.
Yeah, and that's about this is about what the same projections were at Cameron Indoor Stadium. And the over or the total in that game opened at, I want to say, 164 and was bet all the way down to, I think you could get it at like 162 in a lot of places. So it was not what the projections were saying, but that's still pretty high. I don't know if I want to take the over in this game if it's over 160. I would probably, if it's not mid 150s, maybe high 150s, I would probably just stay away from the total because I'm not totally convinced that Duke is going to be able to do anything offensively, because there's a couple of reasons for it. One, they've never been a very good half-court team, right? They haven't at any point this season, and especially not with Zion Williamson out of the lineup. We saw them just struggle with Wake Forest. They needed a dude from Wake Forest to have a layup roll off the rim.
I still have no idea how that didn't go in.
Yes, it was unbelievable. Wake Forest missed two shots in the last 7 seconds. One was a layup that somehow rolled off the rim. That was the only reason that Duke did not lose at home to Wake Forest on Tuesday night. Now, the thing about Zion not being there is, one, he's the best offensive rebounder on the team, so you lose his ability to grab those offensive boards and finish it, and that's easy points right there.
Six to 12 points right there alone.
Yeah, he is the best defensive rebounder on the team, and you're going up against the North Carolina team that loves to pound the offensive glass. He is the most effective defender in the sense that he is the guy that creates steals, that creates runouts, that creates pick-six layups, that so much of what they do in transition is a result of what he can do defensively, even like protecting the rim, block shots leading to runouts, defensive rebounds leading to runouts. So much of their transition game is built on the fact that Zion Williamson was on the floor. So you take away offense that they're going to get in transition. You take away offense that he's going to create from the off of second chance points. And all of a sudden, like, that is – That's what, like 15-20% of their scoring, you think, maybe somewhere around there. And now they're going to have to do all of that other creation, all those other possessions are going to end up being in the half court. So regardless of how fast that they want to play or how fast North Carolina is going to play, I just don't know if Duke is going to be able to run with them the way that they want to run with them. And if they don't, if they got bogged down in the half court, I can see this being a game that ends up like 85-70, you know. And I don't know if I want to have that happen to me again. We already saw it happen once when the Durham disaster. I don't need to invest any more money in that. So,
see, that's the one thing with it being. I'm also planning the senior night where like May and Johnson, and you got to factor Little and White, assuming they're one and dones. They've been in this environment enough now where I don't think they're going to be overwhelmed. Like you see, some teams get kind of overhyped for senior night. I don't think that's going to be the case here. So I think Carolina's going to – I'm basing it essentially on I think Carolina's going to be able to get their 80 to 85 points. It's what – like you said, what happens with Duke. And you are right. We need to see what this line opens at.
Yeah, so it's so much of it all depends on what the line opens at. And we're also – to be clear, we're assuming that Zion Williamson doesn't play. If Zion Williamson does play, take the over and take Duke, no matter what the lines or totals end up being, because it's going to be late news that we get if he is going to play. Coach K hinted at it this week on Tuesday and said that he probably will not play. So when the lines open up, that's going to be baked in there. So if it turns out that Zion does play, then you are going to be able to get a line that is based off of not having the best player in college basketball there. That's where an inefficiency is.
What would you take UNC at without Zion?
Probably up to -9.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't think I'd go that high.
I just don't know how Duke hangs with them in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, I'm just banking on – 9's a lot, and I'm just banking on the rivalry and Krzyzewski drilling him for, you know, they had the scare against Wake and Krzyzewski drilling him for that. And then what Carolina did to them in Cameron, 9's a lot. I was going to say like 4.5, 5.
Yeah. And to be fair, you know, what happened on Tuesday very much could have been a look ahead kind of a situation, yep. A track game kind of situation. Yep. That said, like I'm not necessarily taking that into consideration as much as I am thinking about this. Like, North Carolina is a top five team playing against a team that is missing the best player in college basketball, who happens to be the guy that like makes that matchup advantageous for North Carolina. Without Zion Williamson there, I just don't know where Duke's going to be able to win and where Duke has a plus matchup on the floor. So if he does play, I'm taking the over whatever it is, and I'm betting Duke whatever it is. If he doesn't play, I'm going to hope that the line opens about what you're saying, like North Carolina -5 or -6, and then I will take that.
I agree. That's, to me, the most interesting line opening and movement that I think we'll see this weekend.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's move on. We have Michigan at Michigan State for at least a share of the Big Ten regular season title, depending on what Purdue does. They're at Northwestern, I believe, and I can't remember if it's Saturday or Sunday or if it happens before this game. But Michigan at Michigan State, the first time that they played, Michigan State won at Michigan 77-70. It does not appear as if Nick Ward and Charles Matthews are going to play. But again, we are recording
Purdue's this early, by the way. They're 2:30
Saturday. So we'll have an answer on that.
Yes.
So keep an eye on the status of Nick Ward and the status of Charles Matthews. It does not sound like either of them are going to play. I think that it's a little bit more likely that Nick Ward plays than Charles Matthews does. And I don't know if having those guys out is necessarily a negative for either of these two teams. We can get into why. But first, I want to ask you, Riggs, what do you like in this game? Oh, first, the projections. KenPom has it as Michigan State winning by 4. Torvik has Michigan State winning by 2. And Haslam has Michigan State winning by 6. So let's say that the way that we're going to operate with this is that the total is going to be about 135. And the line is going to be Michigan State -4.
I like Michigan. I think the Michigan State game was weird. The one in Chrysler, like, I trust that Luke Akolich and Beilein are going to be able to draw up a plan better than what they had defensively against the pick and roll with Winston in that game. And that's just putting blind trust in those two. Along with, I don't know if Michigan was riding maybe a little bit high coming into that game. Like, hey, Michigan State's missing these guys. We should be able to run over them at home. I mean, everyone in the world kind of thought that. Now you go to Michigan State. I don't know. Like, I just like this Michigan team better. I feel like they're more balanced. And, yes, I know how good Cassius Winston is. But at some point, that's got to hurt him, right?
Yeah, you would think so, especially since Xavier Simpson is the guy on the other side of the floor who – usually,
he's going to take this game so personal.
He's going to take this game very, very personally. It's going to be Michigan State senior night, so there's a lot that's going to be going into this. I do think that it was interesting what Michigan State did defensively against Michigan in that first game, because they went all the way under, as far under as you could possibly go on every ball screen that involves Xavier Simpson.
Yeah, they just left him.
And then if it was a 1-5 ball screen, if it was John Teske setting that screen, then they just switched it outright and said, we're going to dare Xavier Simpson to beat Xavier Tillman off the dribble, or we're going to dare you to throw the ball into John Teske and let him try to beat Cassius Winston in the post, because they were going to have help. So what I referenced earlier is that I don't think that you can do that as well with Nick Ward, because I don't think he can move as well on the perimeter as Xavier Tillman can. I also think that with the lineup they've been kind of rolling out, I believe, is Iggy Brazdeikis and Isaiah Livers at the forward spots instead of Charles Matthews and Iggy Brazdeikis. And I think that that's probably – they're not going to be as good defensively, but I don't necessarily think that that matters when, you know, you're basically asking Brazdeikis to guard – who would it be? Like Aaron Henry? You know, Aaron Henry is not going to be a guy. Brazdeikis can't really guard anyone. Aaron Henry is not the guy that's going to be able to take advantage of that matchup.
We saw who was it that just left him? the Nebraska or the Indiana game. They just didn't guard him.
Yeah, because I mean he's going to be a very, very good basketball player. As of right now, he is a very, very promising prospect, and those are two very different things. So
right,
and the thing about Livers is he can really, really shoot it, and I don't think you lose all that much defense. Like, he's a good defender. He'll be able to kind of run around with Kenny Goins a little bit and slow him down. So I think I kind of like Michigan as well, but it does not feel right betting against Michigan State at home. So I don't know.
This
I honestly
game,
don't
along
know.
With the Duke game is almost like how many times do we see a true sweep in these series?
Not very often.
Right. So I think I'm just kind of banking on history of split series. Even if it is road wins in each time.
Yeah, and I also wonder, so like Michigan State, what they did against Michigan worked, right? So if you're Tom Izzo, do you develop a new game plan and a new way to guard that, or do you do the same thing?
I think you have to start the game the same way.
Right. So if you start the game,
you have a backup plan.
Yep, and then you also have to figure that John Beilein is going to have a way to beat that. Like, he's going to figure that dude is
too
smart.
Stop taking guys one-on-one when you can't.
He's too smart to not figure out how to be able to adjust to what Michigan State did. You know, he's basically had, what now, like 4 days to figure it out. So,
yeah, because they stopped playing. Their last game was what? Monday? Tuesday?
I think they played Tuesday.
Sunday. No, they played Sunday. They have 6 days to plan it.
Yeah, so he's going to have an answer. And if you're telling me that John Beilein is going to have 6 days to figure it out, that is interesting. The one problem with this is, though, like, Michigan State's not been good on the road.
You mean Michigan?
I mean, Michigan. I'm sorry. Michigan has not been good on the road. I think their five losses are on the road.
Yeah, but they did just beat Maryland on the road, which I think is just as tough to do as winning at Michigan State.
And that's the other part about it. Like, Xavier Simpson was so good in ball screens in that situation, but Maryland did not guard it the way that Michigan State guarded it. You know, it's very different when you can, because what happens is, like, if you let Xavier Simpson get off that screen, go into his right, then that's how he gets into that drive where he can throw up the jump hook, and that's how he can find John Teske on the roll. That's how he can drive, force the big man to help, and he finds the kickback for the pick and pop, John Teske. That's how all that happens. When you start switching those ball screens, you take away Xavier Simpson's ability to kind of turn that corner, get downhill, and be able to throw that shot over his shoulder. You take away Braz Dickus being able to roll to the basket. And the one thing that Michigan State did really, really well in the situations where Cassius Winston did kind of get buried under the basket was they were able to triple switch a lot, which, I mean, is exactly what it sounds like. What you do is you basically just have whoever is, like, tagging in the corner. He goes over and he guards Teske, and you have Winston go and guard whoever it is on the perimeter. And you might still end up with a mismatch, like Winston guarding Braz Dickus or Livers or something like that. But I'd certainly rather have him on the perimeter guarding one of those guys than guarding Teske 4 feet from the rim. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what Michigan State decides that they want to do on that end of the floor. I'm so torn, man, because I really like
again, I want to see the line opens at. Because if it's over four, I'm definitely taking Michigan.
You're definitely taking Michigan on the road in a Big Ten title game.
Yeah. Blind trust in Beilein. You give me 6 days for Beilein with an offensive plan, Luke Jokličić with a defensive plan. I'm trusting it.
Yeah, I think you might be right, man. I think you might be right. This is the one game where I just don't really have a feel. So I don't want to give a take. I'm probably going to stay away from this one. And I feel like it's best to just be honest with people in this kind
that's
of situation.
True.
I don't have a good feel.
What if it's up to six? Like, that's a lot in a game where you assume it's going to be limited possessions.
I would probably take Michigan if I was going to take some, like, a side. But right. I don't. I'm probably going to end up staying away because I don't think the line's going to be six. I think it's going to end up being, like, four.
Yeah. I guess true. We also have to see what happens in the Purdue game. Like, that's an important part to this game.
I mean, not really. No matter what happens, you're playing for a Big Ten title.
True.
Either a share of it or the outright Big Ten title. So let's move on because we do have to talk about another conference that could end up sharing their league title. I want to start with Texas Tech at Iowa State, and this is my favorite bet of the weekend. We can talk about why. It's Texas Tech at Iowa State. The projections all have it right around, like, Texas Tech -1, -2, except for Haslam, who has Texas Tech winning by 5 in Hilton Coliseum. Talk to me about this game, Reeks.
I would no. You start. I want to know why it's your favorite bet. I'm curious to see which way you go.
Because I think that we have a team that is playing for a Big 12 title. And to be clear, like, so Texas Tech and Kansas State are tied for first right now. Texas Tech plays at 2, Kansas State plays at 6. So Texas Tech is not going to know the result of what happened with Kansas State. They are going to be playing as if this is for the Big 12 title. They are looking for revenge because Iowa State won before, so there's that narrative baked into it. They have won 8 in a row and 10 of their last 11. They have been shooting better than anybody else in basically college basketball over the course of the last month. They have gone from being a team outside the top 100 in adjusted offensive efficiency to inside the top 40 in adjusted offensive efficiency. We've talked about all that. Jared Culver's figured it out. All those guys, Matt Mooney, Davide Moretti, Kyler Edwards, Deshaun Corprue, like those guys are all just like playing their ass off right now.
Francis off the bench has been good.
And more than anything, part of the reason I really, really like this is that Iowa State is just an absolute mess right now. For starters, one, they have lost their last two games, right? Both of them by more than, I think by, they lost by 17 at Texas and they lost by 15 at West Virginia. West Virginia is absolutely terrible, right?
And they were up double digits on Texas.
Yep. So they've now lost 5 of their last 7 games. They've had all of these issues with Cam Lard, who's never really figured it out. They have some injury issues with Nick Weiler-Babb. But more than anything, so apparently like something happened in a practice on Monday that resulted in Mariel Shayok injuring his foot somehow. Now, like the speculation is that there was a fight in practice. He kicked a door and he broke his toe. And I don't know if any of that's true, but that's what the kind of working theory is, at least in like all Iowa State media circles. Now, they asked Steve Prohm about it, and like he basically said, yeah, you know, we had a really tough physical practice because I thought we were playing kind of soft and something happened and it spilled over, and then like Mariel Shayok ran into a door. And the way that he explained it didn't really make sense. So Shayok did not play at West Virginia. In that West Virginia game, at one point in the second half, Talen Horton-Tucker, the freshman, didn't want to get in the huddle that they lined up for at the free throw line. And Michael Jacobson, you could see, was yelling at him. Then there was a little bit of a shoving match. So it's a little bit of a mess at Iowa State right now. And if you're telling me that I can get the hottest team in the Big 12 at like -4 against the team that is just a complete disaster, that has 3 losses at home, where the road team is playing for the right to win the Big 12 title, and, oh, by the way, has won their last 3 road games by an average of 15 points, I am all over Texas Tech. Give me all the Texas Tech.
I understand everything you're saying, but this year doesn't this seem like the game Iowa State wins? Because they make zero sense.
Yes, 100%. It seems like that. But I don't care.
I'm also curious to see what the over-under opens up as of what you said about Texas Tech and how good they've been offensively. Iowa State's still a question mark defensively. Mm-hmm. And projections have it at what, like 137?
Yep.
I mean, this could get out of hand. Like, if Iowa State is a complete mess, Tech could go drop 80 on this game.
Yep. But I don't know if Texas Tech, against that defense, I don't know if Iowa State can get over 60.
That's why I'm curious to see where the line opens up. If it's mid 130s and Tech gets 80, a 20-point win's a win in the over.
Yep. So I love everything about this game. I don't know if I'm curious what the line is going to open at, because if Vegas does as they typically do and just kind of ride along with what the like efficiency projections say, then that is going to be something that we need to keep an eye on and we need to really just hammer when it opens.
Yeah. But guess it's like 3.5 is going to be my guess of what it opens at.
If it's 3.5, then I might go 3 or 4 units on Texas Tech.
Yeah, I think that's what it'll open. I think they'll bake in a little bit. Obviously, Hilton being Hilton, I could see it opening at 3.5, somewhere in that range. I don't think it's going to open at, you know, a ridiculously high number or anything like that.
Yeah, the way that I kind of do this stuff and the way that I bet is that I'll bet small here or there. I'll bet small here or there, things that I like. But when I find something that I love, I go all in on it. And this is going to be the game that I go all in on this week. And I think that for all in games, the only time that ended up being lost so far for us has been
the Durham disaster.
And oh boy, that was a Disaster reeks. All right, let's talk about the other game in the Big 12. We have Oklahoma at Kansas State. Oklahoma is coming off of I think it only ended up being a 13-point win at home over Kansas, but it felt like a 25-point win.
Yeah.
Oklahoma had not been – they've been better of late, but they have not been great in Big 12 play. I think they're just 7-10 in the conference. They are 18-12 overall, and I do think that at this point they are probably in the NCAA tournament, win or lose at Kansas State. All the projections have this basically the same. It's about 65-60. So Kansas State favored by 5 with a total at about 125. What do you like here, Riggs?
I think you got to take Kansas State at home, strictly because that place is going to be bananas. Like, that's going to be the second wildest game of the year there outside of the Kansas game. And Kansas State knows what's at stake here, right? Like, a win here, there's a legit chance they could get up to the, like, 2-seed line. I think that's important. If you get a share or win out the Big 12 regular season, and let's say they get to the Big 12 final or win the Big 12 tournament, they should be a 2-seed, right?
Yeah, I guess. Or
you're in the discussion for it.
Yeah, I mean, more than anything, though, like, they're – if Texas Tech wins, they're going to be playing for a share of the Big 12 title. If Texas Tech loses, they're going to be playing for the outright Big 12 title. There is going to be a ton of motivation there. Oklahoma's is going on the road after a big, big win where everybody said it kind of punched their ticket to the tournament. So yep. I lean.
It was a 13-point win on the road already for Kansas State. I think that, listen, we know what they can do defensively. You know, Barry Brown, he's – What Brown and Wade have been able to bring offensively is kind of been the difference, I think, this year on a consistent basis. I kind of trust the Kansas State guards to shut down the Oklahoma guards.
Yeah, and Kansas State has been pretty good about covering when we need them to cover.
Outside of the Texas A&M game.
Outside of the Texas A&M game and outside of the Baylor game where, you know, they pushed. They pushed, so I was able to hit the parlay that I had them in. But still, you know, just give me one more free throw, Barry. Killing me, man. But I
think the fact that they know they're either winning it outright or at least getting a share and they can't afford a loss, I think that's huge. And on senior night with a group of seniors, you know, again, you got to play into the hype here. I don't think this will be a tight Kansas State team. I think Brown and Wade will go out there and have fun and really play into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. If I'm going to be on anything, it's going to be on the Kansas State side. The only concern that I would have is if it gets up to like 6 or 6.5 or maybe even 7, then we're talking about what is almost assuredly going to be a low-scoring game between two defenses that can really grind you down. And I don't know if I want it if it gets past – like if I'm hoping that it opens at like 5 or 5.5 and we can get it there. If it gets to 7, 7.5, then I probably am just going to stay away.
Yeah, limited possessions. You want that number to be as low as possible.
Yep. All right, so there's 4 other games that I just want to touch on quickly. And we can kind of go in depth a little bit more or less depending on how you feel about it. Let's start with Tennessee playing at Auburn. Tennessee will – not know what is going to happen with LSU, but LSU is hosting Vanderbilt, I believe, and that if they can't beat Vanderbilt, then Will Wade is not going to deserve a share of the SEC regular season title. So this is what Tennessee is playing for. A big, big game for Auburn, who does not
Tennessee's at noon.
Yeah, Tennessee's at noon. Yeah. But a big, big game for Auburn, who does not have very many quality wins this season. This is a chance to really solidify their resume. The metrics love Auburn. So all of these projections are basically that, like, Tennessee favored by 1 on the road in a game that with a total right around 151 or so. What do you like here?
I'm almost tempted to take Auburn because I think Tennessee is going to end up being favored. Like, the question is, how much do I end up trusting Tennessee's defense? Like, we saw Ole Miss push them because they were able to hit threes. Auburn can do the same thing. And I guess the debate is who's better, Auburn or Ole Miss?
I would say Auburn's probably better than Ole Miss. But what I will say is this. The last two games have been the two best games on the defensive end of the floor that we've seen Tennessee play this season. They've gone from being outside.
Hyped up hyped up for Kentucky.
Yeah, fair like, enough.
I guess that's a fair question. Is what were the last couple games? Who do you trust? Like, what Tennessee defense do you trust? Last two games or the one that we've seen for the first 26?
I think I trust the last two games a little bit, man. I think I do. The only concern that I would have is that their last two losses have been on the road, and this is another game on the road, and you know that that Auburn arena is going to be absolutely bonkers.
I think it's the most underrated home court, definitely in the SEC.
It's up there. Ole Miss is really, really good, too.
Yeah, but I feel like people know about Ole Miss. I still think people kind of forget about Auburn.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I don't know, man. I don't want to bet against a senior-laden team playing for an SEC regular season title.
Yeah, and that's fair. Like, again, this might be a stay away depending what the line opens up at, but I think Auburn's defense can kind of bother Williams and Schofield. Like, they're athletic enough to kind of bother them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree.
And then it comes down to being able to stop Bone. I think Bone's the X factor in this game.
Yeah, he's been really good late.
He has. But can Bryce – like, I don't know. It's going to be interesting because Auburn's going to try to speed this game up. How does Tennessee – like, you don't think of Tennessee as being able to play in a – and it's not a correct statement, but you don't think that of Tennessee being able to play in a quick game, right? But is the over the play if it's 151?
I think I do like the over here. Because I think both teams are going to want to run. And here's one of the interesting things for me is neither team can get on the defensive glass at all. You know, Auburn is one of the worst high major teams when it comes to defensive rebounding. And Tennessee ranks like 250th nationally. Both of these teams really go to the offensive glass and get more than like about a third of their offensive rebounds. So I do think there are going to be second chances. I do think there are going to be second chance points. The other thing that is interesting is that Auburn, so much of what they do in transition is a result of turning the ball over. And if there's one thing that Tennessee does well, it's that they don't really turn the ball over all that much. So the concern that I would have then is whether or not – because I don't know if I necessarily trust Auburn being able to run and being able to get out and transition all that much, because I don't think that they're going to be able to create the turnovers that they normally rely on to get those situations. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Tennessee's an average three-point defensive team. We know Auburn can shoot the ball. I'm curious to see if the line opens up, because I'm tempted to take Auburn here. Like, they need this win as much as Tennessee does, but it's at home. It's going to be an 11 a.m. game?
Yeah, I think so.
Because Auburn's an hour behind, I believe. That's going to be tempting, man. I'm really curious what this line opens at. Because I think if Tennessee opens up as a favorite, I might like Auburn.
If Tennessee opens up as a favorite, I will probably stay away and just take the over, if anything.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just – yeah, I think the over has to be the play. There's going to be so many possessions in this game.
Yeah, well, I don't know if there are.
I mean, offensive rebounds, there's going to be –
yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right.
Kill him on the glass.
You're right. You're right. I think you might be right. But I will say this: if it gets to the point where Tennessee is getting points, then I'm going to take their money line.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Right. It's going to be an interesting game.
The other game that we need to talk about in the SEC is Florida at Kentucky. Florida will basically be playing for their tournament lives, while Kentucky does not necessarily have anything to play for at this point beyond hoping to get a one seed.
They're still playing for a one seed,
I'd say. Yeah, but I mean it's different to be playing for a one seed than it is to be playing for an SEC regular season title.
Yeah, so, but I guess a one seed or the fact that they play in Louisville, which huge advantage come NCAA tournament.
It would, but again, playing there, it's a different motivation for a 19-year-old kid to say, okay, you got to win this game so we can play in Louisville during the NCAA tournament, and you got to win this game so you can be the champions of the conference that you are playing in.
Sure, sure. I'm just thinking Cal does this pretty much every year where he knows, okay, if they don't have the title wrapped up, it's, hey, you're playing for this spot in the tournament.
So it's the projections are all kind of in the same range. Yeah, about 10. Kentucky, 68. Florida, about 58. What do you like here, Reeves?
I'll tell you what. If Florida would have got that win over LSU, I would have loved Kentucky in the spot. But now I'm a little conflicted because Florida would have had that win, and I think there would have been a little bit of a letdown spot going to Kentucky, who has struggled recently, playing a lot of close games, you know, having to come from behind and hold off Ole Miss. You had to come back from Arkansas. You got killed by Tennessee. Playing your last home game against Florida. If it's under 10, I think I kind of like Kentucky. But I think the under might be the play.
Yeah, I think the under might be an interesting bet. But the thing is, like, if it's what these projections are, then it's
under.
Yeah, it's like 126.
Which I don't think it'll – I think it'll be – oh, man. Let's see. The first game was only –
it was 65-54, and Kentucky kind of pulled away at the end, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they did. So, I mean, like, they can play that low game. No, like, Reed Travis is not expected to play in this game. I don't know. I want to see what the line opens up, but I do think the under might be the play.
Yeah, the under would interest me. I think Kentucky finds a way to get this done.
They're due for a blowout.
Yeah, I think they find a way to get this done. And it's mostly just like betting on the idea that that they've spent, like, ever since they got beat by Tennessee, like, they have just not looked that good. And even against Arkansas, they did not look that good. And I think that coming back home, playing in front of Rupp Arena, the Rupp Arena fans, against Florida is the kind of thing that is going to wake them up a little bit. Like, PJ Washington is due for a big game.
Here's the key. What Ashton Hagen shows up. Because he's been relatively bad lately. And when Kentucky went on that run in the middle of SEC play, Hagans took that giant leap forward, right? Like, he was a menace on the ball defensively. He was getting others involved offensively. He was breaking down the opposing defense. He's been shooting the ball a little bit better the last couple games, but he hasn't been that good defensively, especially off the ball. He's made some kind of just dumb turnovers, which you don't expect to see. I think Hagans is going to be the key. If he can kind of revert back to who he was about a month ago, then I think Kentucky wins this game by 15. If not, then it's going to be a little interesting. I think Keldon Johnson kind of, you know, snapped out of his slump in the Ole Miss game. We saw Kentucky start using that kind of small ball lineup with Keldon at the four, and I think that's huge going forward. That needs to be a more common lineup. Hagans is the key, though. If Hagans can get back to who he was a month ago, Kentucky looks like one of the four or five best teams in the country.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're going to need for this bet to hit and for Kentucky to hit. I don't love it, but if you're forcing me to take something, I would probably take Kentucky, and I would probably lean towards the under. Two more real quick that we can touch on. Villanova at Seton Hall. Villanova finally broke out of their slump a little bit, while Seton Hall has been a team that what they do is they play terribly for about 35 minutes, then Miles Powell goes bonkers, and they end up winning a game that they probably shouldn't win. So what do you like here? Oh, the projections, all three of them are exactly the same. They're saying Villanova 70, Seton Hall 68. This game will be senior night in Newark. Seton Hall probably punched their ticket to the tournament with a win on Wednesday at home against Marquette.
Yeah, I think I like Villanova, a little bit of a letdown spot here for Seton Hall. Like, that, they went on an 18-0 run or something like that against Marquette, and now you have to turn around and play Villanova. A loss here doesn't kill you if you're Seton Hall. It's obviously not great, but it doesn't kill you. Villanova has a chance to win the Big East outright.
Yes.
I believe. Yeah, win a chance to win the Big East outright. So they have something to play for. You know, you trust Booth and Pascal on the road.
They've been bad on the road. They've lost their last four games on the road.
They have, but it's more, I think, just a little bit of a letdown spot for Seton Hall.
Yeah, this is another one where I don't love the spot. I don't love the situation.
No, it's not. And if it's Villanova minus two, I hate that spot even more.
Yeah, so I think if Seton Hall's getting points at home, I would probably, this is another situation where I'm probably just going to take the Seton Hall money line if I'm going to bet anything.
138 is the over-under.
Yeah, but Villanova plays so slow these days. Like you think of them as like a. You think of the under.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because Seton Hall's not a super fast paced team either.
Yeah, they are a little bit. Certainly more fast paced than what.
But defensively, they slow you down.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. If I'm going to bet anything, I'm going to hope that Seton Hall's getting like 2 or 3 points and then take that. And that's strictly a bet against Villanova on the road because they've lost four straight on the road. So last one, it's kind of hard to dive into this too much because, again, we're recording this on a Thursday, and both Houston and Cincinnati will play tonight, but they play on Sunday at noon, presumably as long as Cincinnati kind of holds serve against UCF for the outright AAC regular season title. All the projections have Cincinnati winning by one. Just any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I want to. I think we need to see what happens tonight with UCF because that's a game that Cincinnati can lose. I don't necessarily think they will, but that's when they can lose. They're projected to lose by KenPom standards, but Cincinnati always seems to win these games, especially at home. Or like they won at Wichita State in the last game of the regular season last year for the outright. I don't know. Cincinnati just always seems to win the American game they need to.
Yeah, it's hard to know without knowing what is going to happen on Thursday night against UCF. But I think I would probably if it ends up being that close, I'm probably going to lean towards the team that's playing at home because that's just what I would naturally do.
The place is going to be wild here too.
Yeah. All right, Reese, man, that's all I got for you. Hopefully, you know, in about 22 minutes here, we're going to be kicking off with our afternoon March Madness basketball. So I appreciate the time. I do hope that we can connect at some point next week. I think maybe before the Power Conference tournaments. It's all going to depend on the status of baby stuff. But this will not be the last time that Reeves is on here for a Best Bets podcast. As always, you can follow him at Barstool Reeves. My man, let's get rich again.
Yeah, let's hope, man. Let's hope. Let's have a good one.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.